Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRayHallHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Ray Hall Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome into the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, how are we doing this week?
Doing just fine. My Pirates have won the first two games against the Dodgers earlier this week, so that alone has me fired up.
Well, my Mets are on their way to London to play the Phillies, so that's not a lot of promise there. But they did just sweep the Nationals, so you could say, well, it was only the Nationals. But when you're in the position the Mets are in, you will take any win you could get, Jeff.
As a Pirates fan, I know what you're saying very well.
Okay, let's move on. Tell you what, Jeff, for the offseason, still a lot of news going on. One of the conversations that we've had this week is about the whiteout game. And what's fascinating to me is it does seem to come down to, do you have the whiteout for your toughest opponent, even if it's a day game, or do you always keep it at night? Now, in other seasons, I think there's been multiple games that have the potential to be a whiteout. And the way the university has dealt with it is, well, we'll not have a whiteout, but we'll have a stripe out or the helmet out with just the one blue stripe. This year, I'm not sure there's even one game that makes sense for the whiteout. What do you think?
Yeah, I think so. I think it has to be a night game. That's my take. And even if it's not the biggest game on the schedule, I just think the visual, the optics of the whiteout, it needs to be a night game, at least a late afternoon game where the second half is going to be under the lights. I just think it's the optics of that white, kind of that blinding white, that comes from being under the lights. And yeah, I think you can do the helmet stripe for the, like the Ohio State game, if that is a noon kickoff, that's fine if you want to have the pretend whiteout there. But the actual whiteout, to me, does need to be a night game. I just think the optics of that are what sell the whiteout as the experience that it is. And, you know, it allows the fans to have the day, regardless of the opponent, to get ready for it. You know, my understanding, Jim, is a couple of the fans may even have one, possibly even two adult beverages before the nighttime kickoff. So that allows them a chance to, you know, finish up that second drink before heading into the stadium as well.
Well, first of all, Jeff, I find that hard to believe. I really do. Very few fans will stop at two. So that's why I don't. Oh, Jeff, I've been with you. Yes, you do. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
So. That's supposed to be between us, Galante.
But it is a situation where the couple thoughts, and I've said this on earlier shows, and I wanted to ask you about it, is that What's frustrating to me is why this, it's such a major deal. It's a national story. The whiteout, it's huge. It's become a national storyline, a national event, is how the Big Ten doesn't step in and mandate that one of the bigger games be played at night to accommodate the whiteout. And the example I always give, and our buddy Chris Buchanani argued with me on this, is that Penn State hasn't earned what Michigan and Ohio State have earned. But the entire conference bends over backwards to do exactly what they want, which is a noon game on the final week of the season, no matter what. I think that the conference should be able to step in and say, hey, wait a minute. Biggest game of the year, home game for Penn State this year is Ohio State. We mandate that to be a night game because this is such a spectacle.
part of it is the sway that Ohio State has in the conference that, you know, you may be right, they've earned, and maybe Michigan too. But I do think that, you know, Ohio State is not exactly going to be signing up to, hey, yeah, let's force us to have to experience that night, the night game whiteout and all that that entails. With the crowd noise and all of that. So I don't think you're going to get much support from the rest of the conference as part of the problem. I agree with what you're saying. I just think, you know, few teams want to be the opponent there for the whiteout experience, even if they think it's cool. It is very hard to run your offense in that environment. And so I just think you're going to have a tough time getting support from the schools, the other teams in the Big Ten, and whether the conference itself recognizing the good that comes from having, you know, the marquee home game for Penn State as the whiteout game and needing that to be under the lights, you know, probably debatable. I would argue in favor of that myself. But, you know, at the end of the day, if it does end up being Illinois, and I talked about this with Chris earlier in the week. So there's a couple of things. I'm okay with that. Not thrilled, and I'm with you. You want the biggest game to be that whiteout night experience. But I harbor grudges, Jim, and I don't let go of them. And as I've been telling everybody all week, we've been talking about this up here, I completely get and understand that nobody involved with Illinois football now was involved in the knocking on the doors and the harassment of Penn State players when the NCAA allowed Penn State players to be free agents. But, I mean, it was harassment by Illinois. And, again, I understand the coaches and players involved, even the administrators, they're not there. I get it. I don't care. That bitterness is embedded in me with Illinois. So am I okay with Illinois having that experience and getting absolutely pounded in the whiteout environment? Yes. Yes, I am. Also, and this shouldn't be a driving force, and I understand that, but at the end of the day, you want that whiteout record to be intimidating, to be imposing, to be something that you hang your hat on. And while, yes, I want the Ohio State game to be under the lights and the whiteout, you know, there's a 50-50 chance at best that that's still an L for the team at the end of the day. I think if it is Illinois, there is very close to a 0% chance that that results in an L and that you get to put another big fat W up on the whiteout win-loss column. And I think at the end of the day, I'm okay with that as well. It adds a little bit to the future mystique of the whiteout game and the whiteout experience.
Jeff, this whole pettiness that you're showing towards Illinois, it's very childish. Come on.
It absolutely
someone might is. Tell you to get over it. However, from my perspective, I like it. I like that part of you. When that comes out, I'm good with it, Jeff. Thank you. I do believe also it should be a night game no matter what. And I will never get tired of the night game whiteout atmosphere against Michigan and Ohio State. But for several years, it was Michigan or Ohio State, one after the other. And it's nice to change it up a bit. And I think you hit on something that even if it, like Illinois, hey, we'll find the reason to not like them. But if you come from the last couple years, I keep coming back to Minnesota game that was the whiteout. It was a fun game. It was a fun atmosphere. And if I recall correctly, I like the whiteout being earlier in the season where the weather is cooperating. Wearing a white T-shirt is fine. And it adds to the atmosphere. And Ohio State, even at noon, you know the atmosphere will be a certain way no matter what.
Yeah.
And as you said, and I agree with it, is the fans don't need much encouragement to wear white at Penn State, okay? So if you want to do, in fact, I like the one where they just do the one blue stripe. I guess they call it the helmet stripe, because in essence, it's a whiteout, Jeff. Okay, 95% of the stadium are wearing white. And yes, it's not the same in the middle of the day, but you're already going to have that kind of atmosphere just because it's Ohio State.
Completely agree. And yeah, the excitement level, the energy level, really, I don't think is going to be any different whether it's a whiteout or not in terms of the noon kickoff against Ohio State. Again, I think where the extra energy comes for that whiteout experience is by having it as the night game, and again, having that build up throughout the day, regardless of the opponent. You know, I think it is that experience now that the fans look forward to. And listen, as you said, you're going to be pumped up if you're a fan for a Michigan or an Ohio State game. You know, whether that game kicks off at 9 a.m. or 8 p.m., you're going to be fired up and ready to go if you're a fan, because, you know, it's Ohio State or Michigan, and Penn State needs to beat Ohio State or Michigan. And we don't even have a chance with Michigan this year, so you got to build it all up and take it all out as a fan on the Buckeyes.
My question for you, though, on that, as we're anticipating a noon start for Penn State, Ohio State, will you still manage, Jeff, to squeeze in that two adult beverages before noon?
Maybe one, Jim. You know me. I you know, maybe I'll sneak one in. We'll have to see how I'm feeling that particular morning. Probably just an extra lemonade.
Jeff, you're right. I do know you. That's why are you lying to our audience?
Once again, Jim, I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know where misinformation. That's what this sounds like to me. Misinformation. I get to label anything I disagree with or don't want out there. It's misinformation.
I think you're searching for fake news is what I'm putting out there, Jeff. But I think our listeners can see through you. I'm still going to go back, though, Jeff, to my whole thinking, which is, the conference, is the commissioner in charge of the Big Ten or not? If he is, this is something, again, you're supposed to be representing the whole conference. And to me, a big game whiteout is very much in the best interest of the Big Ten, Jeff.
Agree with you 100% there. Now, that should be something that the commissioner does step in and take care of.
Well, hopefully you have the pull, Jeff, to make that happen. I do not. All right, that is it for quarter number one. We got lots more to talk about. Stick with us. It starts again with quarter number two.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number two. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. We're talking Penn State football. Jeff, we went through the whiteout discussion in quarter number one. I think we all agree whiteout should be at night. So just, I guess the only possibilities are really what, Illinois, UCLA? And we don't even know if UCLA will be a night game. So
yeah,
I guess a very good chance it could be Illinois this year. All right. We're in the middle of the off season, and it's interesting season where I'm a sucker for all of these things that come out, Jeff. Rankings, ranking quarterback rooms, ranking who's the best transfer portal player, toughest schedule, weakest schedule. I fall for every one of them. I read every one of them, study them all, get what I can out of them. And I sent you earlier today a listing that I found fascinating, which was, I think it was Sporting News put this out. They did their consensus top 25. What they did was they took 8 different rankings and compiled them together to get a consensus. Now, the top of the rankings are exactly the teams that you think they would be: Georgia, Ohio State, Texas, Oregon. And Georgia was literally number one, I guess, in all 8 of them, because they also showed their highest ranking and their lowest ranking. Ohio State was 2nd or 3rd, Texas 2-4, Oregon 3-5. But what's interesting is, well, first of all, Penn State was number 10, which kind of, if you've been watching the different rankings that have come out, no surprise there. But this is what I found fascinating for Penn State, and then also a couple other teams we'll mention. Penn State showed in this set of 8 different rankings, the highest ranking for Penn State was number 8. The lowest ranking was number 17. That strikes me as a pretty big variance there, Jeff.
It is. But I also, to me, at least with Penn State, it's understandable, because I do think there's a lot of moving parts here with Penn State. And I think even as we've been talking about the Nittany Lions in the upcoming season, while we're, I think, overall pretty optimistic about what this team can do, the fact is you have a couple of new teams on the schedule, obviously, and those teams, you're not exactly sure what you're getting, by the way, necessarily in the upcoming season, with USC in particular, and having to go out there. But then, you know, I think with 2 new coordinators, with a quarterback who put up very good statistics, but, you know, I think struggled in the 2 biggest games a year ago. I think the questions around wide receiver, and to me, again, there's reasons to think, and I kind of believe that it will come together pretty well here for Penn State in the upcoming year. But with all of those question marks, again, how does the team respond to 2 new coordinators? How does, does Drew Aller take another step? Do the wide receivers take another step forward after losing, one of their key components from a year ago? I mean, I think there's legitimately a lot of questions, and I think there's also a lot of talent. And so in the Penn State case in particular, I get why there would be pretty wide variance here in terms of what this team could accomplish. I mean, I think looking at it, what I think is realistically during the regular season, I think 11 wins is certainly in play, but I think 9 wins is certainly very much in play as well.
Well, and here's another part to this equation, Jeff, and I'm not sure everyone who does these rankings takes this into consideration. With the expanded Big Ten, the expanded Southeast Conference, especially the Southeast Conference, there's what, 16 teams in the conference, you only play 8 conference games. There's going to be a huge disparity in schedules. For example, I went through this and using one of the rankings and just saying that every game went to chalk. Georgia ranked number 1, Texas the next highest ranked. Let's just say if you're ranked higher, you win the games against each other. And I played that out. Well, I'll bring up Oklahoma, who is in this ranking, has a highest ranking of number 8, lowest ranking of number 19. Based on that kind of ranking where they would lose to everyone above them in the schedule, Oklahoma would lose 6 games.
Wow.
In that same kind of thing, LSU would only lose 2. But I'm sure if you're just looking on the surface, you'd probably have very little, difference between those 2 teams.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's the thing. There are, also, how many of the quote unquote big games are at home? And then there's all the things that you don't know right now. Like if Drew Aller goes down in the first half of the first game, well, that changes substantially the outlook. I think certainly at least externally, of what Penn State is likely to do. So I mean, the injury components, the schedule for sure, but in particular, home versus away. And, you know, again, the other among the many unknowns as we sit here right now is, like, USC, I think, is a team that I could see shocking people and coming together and having a terrific season, much better than I think anybody is projecting. And I could also see that thing going really south in a big way for USC in the upcoming season. So, you know, if USC, if it all does come together, all of a sudden that game for Penn State, for example, going out there becomes, you know, a huge challenging obstacle. If they get off to, you know, they're a 3-4 football team through the first seven games, well, yeah, it's still a long trip. It's still an interesting place, but it doesn't have quite the same impact. So, I mean, that's part of the fun of trying to project at this stage of the season what's going to happen in the upcoming season. But there's just so many unknowns that, you know, you're trying to quantify. And when you're trying to do it at this point, I mean, you have to kind of presume everybody's on an even footing. And that obviously, in terms of, you know, health, and the things that, again, we can't possibly know right now. And that obviously is not going to play out that way, but none of us have any idea how it's going to play out.
And again, the disparity in schedules, but going back to this composite ranking where I said, gee, Penn State being ranked eighth in one poll and 17th as the lowest, other teams, interesting, Florida State, a high of 7, a low of 20. But what might be the most interesting is LSU with a high of number 10. And in another poll, they weren't even ranked, Jeff.
Yeah, that seems a little crazy to me that you can have a team with that type of disparity. Although, again, and just to go to Penn State, Jim, like last year we talked about, I think most of us felt really good about Penn State having a chance to surpass that 10-win mark that didn't end up happening. But most people looking at that schedule last year thought, not that anything was guaranteed, but it's like 10 games Penn State should win, and then can they get over the hump against either Ohio State or Michigan? And it felt pretty much like that was the, you know, two games that are, you know, in the minds of Penn State, at least, kind of toss-ups, could go either way, and then 10 games you should win. This year, while I think there are 11 on paper, I think 11 very winnable games, I also think among those 11, there's probably four there that right now you're like, yeah, I don't think it's far-fetched to say Penn State would lose those. And I mean, I haven't sat down and looked exactly at LSU's schedule, but again, two losses can be the difference between being 10th, you know, or in that neighborhood and being unranked or at least on the bottom end of the top 25. I mean, 8-4 gets you probably at the bottom of the top 25. 10-2 with a good schedule and a strong finish could put you in at number 10. So again, if you have a couple of games that are like, could go either way, and somebody thinks you're going to lose both of them or somebody thinks you're going to win both of them, I mean, you can pretty quickly account for, yeah, that's a difference of 10, 12 spots in the rankings.
Well, you mentioned the, you know, schedule, how many of the tough games you get. You also talked about USC. USC gets Michigan and Penn State, but in their non-conference schedule, they get LSU and Notre Dame.
Yeah, cupcakes.
They're going to have to earn it.
USC. Oh, yeah, that's what I meant. Not Cupcake City. No. Yeah, that is a very, very tough schedule. But at least with Caleb Williams. Oh, wait, what's this? Caleb's not. Oh, well, this could be. But this is the thing. So USC, though, I think everybody agrees, like, the cupboard's not bare. Like, this is a team that has a lot of talent. Well, if they can catch fire early, get a big win or two, then all of a sudden, again, maybe everything comes together and this becomes a really special season. But with that schedule, yeah, it's pretty hard to project as we sit here right now with any assurance that, oh, yeah, no, USC is going to be a top 10 type of team. But again, with those opportunities and that schedule, that that does afford them that opportunity if they're able to go out and, you know, surprise again, especially early, because I think, you know, that confidence factor, the wow factor of impressing voters. Again, you go out early and you get a big win over an LSU and or a Notre Dame, and all of a sudden people are, you know, they're ready to build you up as one of the big boys quickly.
But what it probably also does, though, Jeff, the bottom line to it is you're risking a loss out of conference. And if you're in the Southeast Conference or the Big Ten, you'd like to think that you have enough big games to risk your schedule. You don't need that kind of out of conference game.
For sure. And I think that's why you're seeing the dearth of those types of matchups overall in college football. I mean, USC's non-conference here is very much the exception, not the rule these days in big time college football.
And you also have USC trying to get out of that LSU game, which, you know, some people say, hey, go out there, play it. It's a game that a win could mean something, could get you into the playoffs. Well, there's more risk there involved than anything else. But the interesting thing, Jeff, is I put out the premise of if you play in one of those big conferences, you're going to play enough big games already. Not so fast. We're going to talk about that when we come back.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by Bobby Rahal Honda of State College. Visit us at our West College Avenue showroom or at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com. Allow us to demonstrate our commitment to excellence. Bobby Rahal Honda of State College, driven by a higher standard.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number three. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We're talking Penn State football. And Jeff, we were looking at some of those rankings and talking about the effect the schedule has. And I sent you today another one of those great articles that come out. And it was someone did an article. They took, I believe it was they used FanDuel for the over-under a number of wins for each team in the Big Ten. And then they gave their estimate of what they thought was too high, too low, or just right. But it kind of leads to, you look at these and you say, gee, this is Rutgers. This is Oregon. You know, what does that number mean specifically for that program? But what I wonder is how much people are looking at the schedules to see who those teams are playing. Let's talk about the Big Ten a little bit. And for example, Ohio State, I have no love for Ohio State, but if they could go through this schedule undefeated, they have to play Oregon, they have to play Penn State on the road, and they have to play Michigan. That's three tough games that they have to get through. And just to show you what the alternative schedule could look like, Rutgers, their over-under is 6.5 wins. That might seem a little bit high for a Rutgers, but do you know how many of Penn State, Michigan, Oregon, and Ohio State, who I think are the consensus four top teams in the conference. Do you know how many of them that Rutgers plays this year?
Let me do the math here. Let's see. I've never been really good at this. I carry the one and then add the – I'm getting zero, Jim. I'm showing zero.
You are exactly right. Now – they have, I believe, I'm looking at it. They have Wisconsin, Nebraska, USC probably being the biggest name. But this is a team who, over the last so many years, part of the Big Ten, they had to play Penn State, Michigan, and Ohio State every year. This year, none of them.
That is amazing that it works out that way. And the fact that they are at 6.5 just reaffirms it's Rutgers that we're talking about, and not a team that should be mistaken for a contender in the Big Ten Conference. But yeah, and this is some of the, and I don't know what the answer is. Again, when you have a conference as big as the Big Ten, and speaking of math, how you get a Big Ten conference with 18 teams is still a little head-scratching to some of us. But at the end of the day, yeah, you're going to have years where there are teams that are going to avoid, just by the cyclical nature of the schedules. Now, I don't know about – I mean, that is amazing that none of the top four teams that we're expecting to be the top four anyway going into the season appear on Rutgers' schedule. But there are going to be quirks like that when you get into these bigger conferences. And, again, you're still only playing the nine conference games.
Here's another anomaly of the schedule, and I've got to look – the over-under on Iowa is 7.5. But the Big Four, again, Iowa has one game. They play Ohio State. That's the only game they have against the Big Four.
Yeah. And again, same thing. I just think, and Iowa's going to be an interesting team to watch this year, because I do think they're in for a bit of a down year. And so that schedule is probably pretty welcome for the folks in Iowa City. But again, you're going to have these kind of oddities where in a given year, you know, there's going to be another team that is going to be playing all of the top four contenders in the conference. And I just don't know what you do. I mean, that's clearly not fair. But again, I don't know what you do about it, because it's not – the same four teams every year. I mean, you have a pretty good idea that Ohio State for the foreseeable future is likely going to be up there. And I think Oregon's probably pretty likely to be up there. But again, I mean, it varies year to year in terms of, all right, these are the big dogs. So it's not like you can even, you know, put a schedule together where it's like, okay, we got to make sure, you know, every team is facing at least one, or, you know, ideally a couple of these top contenders, because you're doing that a couple of years out. And you know, even we'll see how this plays out. I mean, we're supposing that we know right now that these are in fact going to turn out to be the top contenders. Maybe a couple of these teams have very subpar seasons. And again, I think a team like USC could catch fire and surprise a lot of folks. You know, I think Nebraska is another team that I'm just interested to see. Can they take a big step forward and become a team that surprises and maybe, you know, picks up nine wins on the season in the upcoming year?
So if you're talking surprises, though, I said Ohio State, Oregon, Michigan, and Penn State, I looked at as the four best teams, and surprises happen. Is there any way in the world one of those four teams lose? Well, you mentioned Penn State conceivably could go 9-3. Is there any way Ohio State loses more than two games, or Oregon or Michigan, if you had to bet?
So if I had to bet, no. But Ohio State, Jim, I keep saying this. And listen, I think they are probably the most talented team. I think on paper, I think they're even more talented than Georgia. Very comparable anyway. But certainly the most talented team in the Big Ten. And but because of the dynamics there with Chip Kelly and some of the pressure on Ryan Day, and they have a lot of different guys from a lot of different schools coming in, and you know they're trying to join together, I am not predicting that the wheels come off, but I do think there is a chance if this team, you know, let's say they lose that game at Oregon. How much finger pointing goes on in that locker room? How many, you know, does a fissure quickly develop between Ryan Day and Chip Kelly? Like, I think that thing, while it has the potential to result in a national title, like everybody in Columbus is kind of counting on, I think now, I do think that is certainly a distinct possibility, and I could see Ohio State running the table, dominating the overwhelming majority of its opponents, and they just march through the way everybody, or at least a lot of people, are expecting. But I also think, because of, again, the different dynamics and the chemistry, that the questions about the chemistry that I have on that team, I don't think it's quite as sure of a thing. And I think the potential is there. If they do struggle early and if they have an unexpected loss early, I do think there is a chance that the wheels do come off and that they could, again, wheels coming off in Columbus is not exactly the same as the wheels coming off elsewhere. But, like, yes, could I see a 9-3 season for Ohio State? Yes. I don't think it's likely. If I was betting, that's not how I'm betting. But I do think it's within the realm of possibility, just because I don't think that that chemistry is there. While I have no questions about the talent being there, I do have questions about the chemistry.
Do you think the fact that it's now a 12-team playoff, that an Ohio State team, I mentioned earlier, like USC playing LSU in an out-of-conference game, a loss there could be devastating. Whoever loses that game, they are in huge trouble as far as making the playoffs because of what they have going for them.
Yep.
Ohio State, though, I think is a team, again, so talented, where in another year, a conference loss, as soon as Ohio State loses to Michigan, they win their other 11 games. But that one loss takes them out of the Big Ten championship game and maybe takes them out of the college football four-team playoff. This year, though, with 12 teams, one loss does not do that to you. Do you think that will change that thinking that, hey, one loss, we shrug it off, we still have our destiny in our own hands?
It should. I don't know that it will when you have a program with the expectations that Ohio State does this year. And again, the timing of it is probably important too. I mean, the Michigan loss, if they lost to Michigan and that was their only loss, well, it would be devastating in the moment. I think the fact that you can come back and win a national title ultimately allows the sting of that loss to subside pretty quickly. And while the same scenario is certainly still in play, if you lose early, even more so, really, if you lose early, I just think because of the expectations and what everybody is in Columbus is hoping for, that again, if you do lose that game at Oregon, I think all of a sudden that pressure gets ramped up and now you are in a position where maybe, it's not a guaranteed, even a second loss. There's going to be two lost teams, obviously, in the playoffs. So even a second loss isn't devastating. But I think that pressure gets ramped up. And then it's just going to be interesting to me to see how the egos involved, both in the coaching ranks and in the player ranks in that locker room, how all of that does or doesn't come together or stick together if there are some trying times, especially early in the season.
And where I think that could also happen with Ohio State is there's not a, like in other years, that definitive number one quarterback. And if a quarterback has a disappointing game,
yep.
That's where I think the locker room could be split. Do having multiple, that's the problem with multiple good quarterbacks. Does the support get split among the team from the couple quarterbacks?
Yeah. I think they're going to be a fascinating watch because certainly they are really, really talented and they could be one of the historically great teams out of the Big Ten. But because of the makeup of that roster and coaching staff, I just think there's a lot of potential pitfalls from within that will be storylines worth following. And again, it could very well all come together and work out just the way the Buckeyes fans are hoping. I think that is a distinct possibility. But I also think it is really possible that this thing gets out of kilter very quickly and can't get realigned this season.
it will be an interesting follow. But like I said, the fact that they do have Oregon and Penn State on the road and also the game with Michigan, if they go through that schedule undefeated, they will have really earned it. All right, that's it for quarter three. Much more to go in quarter four.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, general manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter number four. He's Jeff. I'm Jim. We've been talking about a little bit of the collegiate football national picture. How the schedules will affect things in the Southeast Conference and in the Big Ten, pointing out that a team like, Rutgers may not play any of the best teams this year, where someone else might play all of the good teams. Now, let's get a little more specific. Let's talk about Penn State and their setup, Jeff. They are at, with FanDuel, the over-under is 9.5 wins. I think I saw that DraftKings at one point, they had them at 10.5 wins, which I thought as kind of high. I thought 9.5, based on the national perception of Penn State, was the right number. Let me ask you, what's the right number for over-under on Penn State?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, I think it is right at 10, Jim. I mean, which is kind of what Penn State has been, you know, for the most part under James Franklin. And you know, the difference this year is, again, Michigan's not on the schedule. So you have Ohio State as the, you know, the biggest challenge on the schedule. But I do think, and it's interesting because I was just talking to somebody about this. I think 10-2 is the right number for Penn State. And I think 10 is the number most are expecting them to land on. So whether you have it at 10.5 or 9.5, if you feel like you need to go the half, it's whether you're on the low end or upper end. I guess I would tend to lean toward the 10.5 as being the right number, because while I think 10 is the actual right number, I think the potential for more losses this year is there. But I also think that really, as you look at it right now, if you go through game by game, and again, really difficult to try to do that with any accuracy months before the season even begins. But I think if you go through game by game, at least as a Penn State fan, I think Ohio State's the only game there where you're like, yeah, that's probably an L. I think the other 11 are either pretty definitively a W, or in the minds of Penn State, at least, probably a W. I mean, I think any of those games individually, if you look at it, it would be a disappointment if Penn State loses it. Now, that's not to say that I think 10-2 would necessarily be a disappointing season, and it's not to say that there aren't significant challenges there starting right away with the trip to Morgantown. I think that is a dangerous game, but I think truthfully, if you're a Penn State fan or even covering this team, you'd be hard-pressed to not concede that a loss there would be a disappointment. And it's the same thing as you go through the entire schedule. Like at USC, wouldn't be an embarrassment, at least as we sit here now and what we're thinking is going to happen, but it would be disappointing. I don't think that's a game you're expecting right now, at least, to lose. Wisconsin, the same thing. I mean, maybe kind of a 50-50 deal, but really, I think if you're Penn State, you're looking at where Penn State is right now, what they're trying to get to, where Wisconsin is, and kind of the expectations, that in and of itself, that game would be a disappointment. I think you're expecting Penn State to win it. Certainly at home with Washington, home with UCLA. I mean, the other games on there, again, I think individually, I'm hard-pressed to find a game where you're like, well, yeah, I think you kind of concede that one going into the season. And I'm not saying Penn State's conceding the Ohio State game, but I think most people would objectively concede that Ohio State is rightfully the favorite, in part because I think Ohio State would rightfully be the favorite over anybody and everybody this season, the possible exception of Georgia. But truthfully, I think if you put Ohio State and Georgia on a neutral field right now, I would lean toward Ohio State.
Well, first of all, I'm with you. They usually try to make those over-unders, put the half in, so you either win or you lose, not the push. Right. But if there was ever a team that should be on the number 10, it's Penn State. But that leads me, Jeff, to the next question, which is the level of expectation at Penn State and for James Franklin. I think there was a lot of enthusiasm, optimism for last year's team that they would at least get a split between Michigan and Ohio State. They didn't. That seems to me, at least nationally, where I read, and also regionally or locally, this same old with James Franklin. In fact, one of those articles, you know, the anonymous coaches from other Big Ten schools, Penn State and James Franklin are the best of the good teams, you know, damning with faint praise there. And so that seems to be the narrative. I guess my question is there extra pressure on James Franklin this year, where the other part of the narrative is, hey, if there was ever a team that needed a 12-team playoff, that's Penn State. With that being the case, is this a situation where he better make the playoffs?
I mean, yes, I think Penn State needs to make the playoffs. I think that is the expectation externally, internally, and all around. If you're asking me, like, do I think James Franklin's job is in jeopardy if they go 9-3 and finish 13th? No, I don't. I think he's safe. I think the frustration will be palpable, but I don't think in terms of, man, if he's going to keep his job, he has to do this. No, that pressure isn't there. But is there pressure? And I think, you know, from James himself, for this team to get into the playoffs in the first year that it has the 12-team format, yeah, I mean, I think that is real. And I think it is something that Penn State certainly needs to be shooting for. And I think if they do fall short of that, I do think this season falls into the disappointment category. But again, I don't think if it's 9-3 and you have three close losses in there and you just miss again, while it'll be frustrating and while there will be calls for sure, there will be calls unless they win the national title, and maybe even then for James Franklin by some segments of the fan base. But I mean, realistically, he's not in any danger in that regard. But I do think it is important. I think it is really important on the recruiting front at this stage that they get into the playoffs. I think it is really important just for the feel around the program, and for sure from the national perception standpoint. But 10-2, I think Jim gets them into that 12-team format this year.
I believe that could very well happen where a two-loss team from the Southeast Conference or the Big Ten risks not making it to the playoffs because, you know, you have that Big 12 winner, the ACC winner, and the Group of Five best team. So there's three spots that will go to perhaps teams ranked lower than 12th. So You've got to, you know, to guarantee you're in, you've got to be like ranked in the top nine to guarantee it. But I think it's hard to argue with 10-2. But I think the other part of the pressure is there are some elite players on this year's team that will not be here next year. You have an Abdul Carter who will be gone. Deni Dennis Sutton, the other guy, gone. On the offensive side, and Nick Singleton, a Tyler Warren, and even, you know, Drew Aller, who is your five-star quarterback that you didn't have previously and don't have coming up again, could be gone. So it looks – that's why I asked the thing about the pressure on James Franklin and the narrative that he needs to make it this year.
Well, and I think that's a good point, and I think that really is the issue because, again, I guess it depends on how you're looking at this and where you're drawing the line. But what I would contend is if they don't make it this year, and I think this is basically what you were saying, but if they don't make it this year, it is likely to damage them some in the recruiting front. And yes, then that momentum that they, I think, still have, even though there was some disappointment with last season and the way it ended, I do think there's still momentum around this program. That is gone, I think, if they don't make the playoffs this year. And so I do think it becomes more difficult, not impossible, but I think it makes it more difficult then to make the playoffs the following year. And especially if, yes, a Drew Aller isn't around or, you know, some of the other guys that will have decisions to make opt out. So part of this is the reason I think it is crucial this year, while it's not a situation, again, I don't believe where James Franklin's coaching for his job. The issue is if they don't make it, then each successive year, that pressure to make it gets ramped up. And I think it becomes more difficult for Penn State to achieve that level of success with each passing year that they don't achieve that mark. So it becomes kind of a cascading issue where ultimately, I guess you could say it could cost James Franklin his job if 2 years down the road, the program doesn't appear to be making headway and still hasn't been in the playoffs. Then I think you're at a spot where, yeah, now you're starting to seriously look at whether or not Penn State needs to or will, in fact, move on. So, again, it's a big year, and it is a season where I think Penn State needs to make the playoffs. And again, I guess we're going to get into parsing what the word need makes, but I think it is vitally important for this program and its future that Penn State is one of the 12 teams in the playoffs this year. And I do I think 10 wins gets them there. I guess part of that will depend too on what are the two losses, what do they look like? I mean, a two-loss team, if they get waxed by USC and they lose by 7 touchdowns to Ohio State, okay, that might not get you in, and that's not going to be what I'm talking about here. But I mean, a 10-2 season where you lose a close game, you know, let's say at USC or at Wisconsin, and you lose by a touchdown to an Ohio State team that goes in as the 1 or 2 seed, I think you're in the playoffs in that scenario.
And I think that Penn State and the number of teams that will come out of the Big Ten, maybe there'll be 4 teams. I think Penn State will be one of the 4 best teams, and that 2-loss record would put them there. And, you know, is there another team that could come up and surpass Penn State as the 4th best team? And Penn State, I think, other than Michigan, Oregon, and Ohio State, Penn State has the name value above the other teams in the conference. So as a tiebreaker, I know that's not the way it's supposed to be, but it is the way it works out. All right, Jeff, that's going to be it for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Reputation is everything. Hi, I'm Matt Nobby, General Manager of Bobby Rahal Honda State College, and we're proud of the reputation we've built with our customers. We're not just here to sell you a new car. We support you through every mile of your Honda ownership with benefits like free state inspections and a complimentary loaner vehicle. We'll even wash and vacuum your car when it's in for service. Our reputation is car buying made simple and great service after the sale. Stop by our West College Avenue showroom today or go online at BobbyRahalHondaOfStateCollege.com.